Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled, Six Things All Contractors Need to Understand But Are Seldom Taught. This wide-open, back-and-forth interview between Tom Grandy, founder of Grandy & Associates, and Bill Kennard, president of Grandy & Associates, is both interesting and enlightening. Grandy & Associates has taught over 20,000 contractors how to run profitable businesses over the past 35 years. Oddly enough, there are six areas that are of vital importance to contractors that are seldom taught outside of the Grandy classroom.
That's right, Bill. This presentation will cover those six areas and are critical to the profitable growth of any trades company. Sometimes contractors simply don't know what they don't know. This presentation will explore those areas.
Well, most listening today are quite familiar with Tom Grandy and Bill Kennard, having attended at least a few of their classes over the past 35 plus years. Therefore, we'll skip introductions and backgrounds. And now, with six things all contractors need to understand but are seldom taught, here is Tom Grandy and yours truly, Bill Kennard, with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation. Well, hey, Tom, this is an exciting time at Grandy & Associates. We're celebrating 35 years in business. That's an incredible milestone. I mean, did you think back in the fall of 1987, when you hung your shingle out for the first time, did you have any clue what, you know, that we'd be here 35 years later or what it would look like?
Bill, I was like most contractors who start a business. I was absolutely clueless. I started the business, same reason they started a business. I got to put food on the table. Maybe this will work. Mm-hmm. Lord blessed what we did. He opened up some doors that couldn't have been opened up in other ways. You joined the company 15 years ago and took us light years ahead of where we were. No, I had no idea, but I'm just really grateful for what's happened.
Yeah, we have been blessed. There's no question about it, haven't we? You think about that piece. I mean, 35 years of working with contractors. And mm-hmm. You know, really, you have worked with thousands and thousands of contractors over the years. And think about how many different trades that we're in. I mean, how many trades have you worked with that you're aware of? I mean, let me rephrase this. What kind of trades?
Almost literally all the trades. Technically, there's 40 different trades out there. We've been working with chimney sweeps, plumbing, electrical, pest control, landscaping. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally every trade out there we worked with and probably put on a pro for at least their state convention, if not their national convention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's amazing, just thinking back over the years, even the time that I've been with you, in terms of some of the experiences and the contractors. And one of the things that I always find really cool is with everything we do, right? I mean, we're in the business of changing lives, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we do, with the stuff that we're teaching them, you and I have both seen a lot of examples where, somebody is struggling and literally looking at going out of business. Right? And it yeah. doesn't, you hear later kind of their success story after that, right?
I'm sure you've had the experience in class where a husband and wife are sitting there and halfway through the presentation, the wife goes, hits him in the side and said, I've been telling you that for 5 years.
It's either that time or the other one that I find interesting is when it's father and son or mother and son mm-hmm. or father and daughter or mother, that kind of thing. And you get to the end of the workshop and they're both saying, right, Junior is going, man, Dad, yeah, I knew he did a lot of stuff, but I had no clue. Right. And Dad's going, you know what? Junior's got some pretty good ideas here. Yeah, maybe we need to start implementing.
They come together.
We just
mm-hmm.
brought two generations together. That's absolutely right. And that's so rewarding every time
that
I see that happening.
Yes.
We look at really what we do, right? And you've been doing it for 35 years and working again through all trades with contractors of all size, really. Mm-hmm. And you've identified really several different topics that most contractors need to know, but many seldom do, right? They're not taught it, right?
Right.
I mean, why do you think some of these issues, and we'll go through them, right? Why do you think those issues, you know, if they're so critical, why don't contractor or business owners know about them?
Well, you've heard the term before, we don't know what we don't know. Mm-hmm. People got into business to make a living. Mm-hmm. They have no business background normally at all. So we start doing what we do. Mm-hmm. We go out and fix things. We work hard. We make a little bit of money. And we don't realize there's a need for what we're going to discuss this afternoon until you've probably been in business for a couple of years at least. Mm-hmm. That point, you start saying, gee, I didn't think about this, or I didn't think about that, and maybe I better find out how to do this. And the light bulb goes off a little bit.
All right. Nobody told me about that. Right. And so, you know, you look at just some of the experiences that companies have over the years throughout the life of their company. Right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, even here at Grandy, we've gone through a number of those. Right. In 35 years, you look at the number of tough economic times and the high times that you've gone through. And certainly we have as well. We've kind of weathered those, and you have to adapt to them. Right. And we've been through a leadership change, and you're very gracefully handing off the baton and doing it well. There's a lot of those things. Business isn't always as easy as it looks, is it?
It's never as easy as it looks.
Right. And when you're looking at somebody who makes it look really easy, you're not seeing the whole picture, odds are, correct?
Yeah.
There's something else there. So let's dig into some of these topics that you've identified, right? And the first one that you identified is that labor pricing needs to be calculated based on cash flow dollars, not accounting dollars. Talk to us about that a little bit.
There's a huge difference in cash flow and accounting. Mm-hmm. Accounting tends to work with paper dollars, where cash flow deals with the real dollars that flow in and the real dollars that flow back out. Mm-hmm. The obvious example is a loan payment. You got a $500 loan payment, $100 of its interest, $400 of its principal. The only thing that shows up on your P&L statement is $100 interest.
Right.
But you wrote out a check for $500. It flowed out of the company. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of other things like that, that dollars actually flow out of the company but are not tracked from an accounting standpoint. That doesn't mean accounting is bad. It's needed. It's necessary. You got to file your taxes. But it doesn't help you when it comes to setting labor rates properly.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's really so important. And, when you look at that piece of the puzzle, I mean, what are some of the dangers of, okay, I've got 1, 2, 3 loans that are out there, right? How does that ultimately look when I compare accounting to cash flow at the end of the year?
Typically what happens is my accountant hands me the statement with a big smile on their face and says, congratulations, Bill or Sam or Sally, you had a wonderful year.
Right.
You made X numbers of thousands of dollars of which you'll pay taxes on. And you look in your checkbook and you say, where is it? Yeah. Well, it went out in other forms that they don't account for.
Mm-hmm. So, at one point you had given an example of, you know, I may have made, you know, at the end of a period of time, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, whatever the number is, right, in profit is what my P&L is showing, but where did it go?
Yeah,
right.
It's not unusual for a P&L statement from an accountant to say you made $25,000, and in reality, from a cash flow standpoint, you lost $10,000 or $15,000. Mm-hmm. And the part that hurts is you have to pay taxes on that $25,000.
Right. Darn Uncle Sam, right? So you look at that part of it, right? So maybe, yeah, you had $5,000 that you paid on one loan and $3,000 on another and $5,000 in a third place, right? And all of a sudden that, you know, all that profit that was showing on the end of the P&L is gone. And really, there's another scenario today and really over the last number of years that's exacerbated that a little bit more. And that is the zero interest loan on vehicles, right?
Uh-huh.
Because think about that. What's the impact on the P&L of a zero interest loan?
Huge. Because none of that shows up. It's all gone. There's nothing. You're paying out $600-$700 a month that shows up nowhere on your P&L statement.
Yeah, because only the interest shows on the P&L, right? Not the principal.
Right.
And
that's
if
right.
It's zero interest, it means it's all principal.
Yeah. People think it's free money, but it's not. You still got to pay it as a loan every month, period.
Right? I mean, I always find that interesting. Is it really zero interest? Of course not, right? They've got it built into the cost of the vehicle and everything else that they're doing. So, and so that actually makes the problem worse at that point. Really, let's look at that piece of it a little bit, right, is the equipment, right? Because equipment replacement costs are, they're a sizable chunk of the contractor, right?
Absolutely. It's generally your second highest cost of doing business in the entire company.
Right.
When we teach cash flow, we're talking about what it's going to cost you for a piece of equipment when it wears out 2, 3, 4, 5 years in the future, and we build the future cost into our pricing so that when we're ready to replace that piece of equipment, we got the dollars available to cover it. Mm-hmm. When you look at an accounting situation, they're looking at depreciation, and it always deals with what you paid for it 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. Well, typically, the difference in those two numbers is anywhere from 20 to 40% at least. Mm-hmm. Big difference.
Yeah, no question. And so again, it's kind of that, one of our other trainers always says, we have to get tomorrow into today. Right, get the expenses for those trucks tomorrow into your pricing today, so you don't have to go out and take out a loan.
Exactly,
and you have that one. Good. All right, so that's an excellent point. Now, the second item that you listed is failure to build debt into the company's hourly rate. What do you mean by that one?
Most contractors, I wouldn't say all, but most of them, from a cash flow standpoint, start out their business with very little money or zero or borrowed. So they're in trouble to begin with.
What was my last paycheck at my other job, right?
Yeah, something like that. So typically we go into debt fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. We get the loans on the trucks. We get the line of credit at the bank. We get extended terms with the supplier. We're a little bit behind in our taxes. We borrowed money from Uncle Joe. This somehow got to get paid back. Mm-hmm. So we're accumulating all this debt fairly early. Payment of debt shows up zero in terms of accounting. You pay back $10,000. Guess what? It doesn't show up in your accounting statement anywhere.
Yep.
but the bottom line is you still got to pay it back. Mm-hmm. So if I've got a situation where I made $25,000 profit last year. I'm a small company, made $25,000 profit, but I had to repay those things I just talked about to the tune of $35,000. I just lost $10,000 from a cash flow standpoint that year. Again, because it doesn't show up in your P&L statement anywhere.
Sure. So that one kind of ties into item number one a little bit, making sure that labor pricing is set so that we can cover this. Now, how would you, there's two instances that come to my mind as you talk about that debt. The first one being a line of credit. Because a lot of contractors kind of miss that one a little bit, right? So what are some of the problem, with a line of credit? I'm making that payment every month.
Well, a line of credit is something that every company needs, but it needs to be used properly, and properly means short-term borrowing against receivables. So if you got $25,000 coming in next week, you find out it's not going to be here for 90 days. Mm-hmm. That's when you go borrow on your line of credit, pay all your debts, take care of payroll, et cetera. But when that check comes in, you pay it back to zero. That's how it's supposed to work. But what happens is we borrow money against that line of credit and it goes up and up and up and up and up, and pretty soon I owe $75,000. Mm-hmm. Well, if I don't build that $75,000 I owe into my loan payment or into my hourly rate, it never gets covered. Mm-hmm. So again, I've got to take that $75,000 and say, hey, I'm going to get it paid off in 2 years, 5 years, 8 years, whatever I say, and build those dollars into my hourly rate. That's the only way it's going to get covered without just siphoning off at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, too many contractors actually tend to look at that, what are my expenses, and they're not looking necessarily at bringing debt down to zero, right? Yeah. So, because again, I'm making the payment every month, but if it's just interest payment, yeah, that portion shows up on the P&L, but it doesn't help get rid of the balance that's out there.
Exactly.
And that's one area that, quite frankly, in today's climate, I mean, if banks are going to tighten things up a little bit, lines of credit is where they tend to look first, isn't it?
Yep. Yep. That's the first place they'll look. And the principle for all small businesses, including all trades, is get out of debt as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. You and I have taught for years, you need to do that because there's going to be another 2008, 2009. Well, guess what? We're in another 2008, 2009. Things are tightening up, and it's the company who has the least amount of debt or is debt-free that's going to make it through the next cycle.
Sure. You know, I think it was Warren Buffett who said, right, it's when the tide goes out, you can see who's been skinny dipping, and sometimes it's not real pretty, right? So, you know, you think about that. Isn't it amazing? You can hide a lot of financial garbage, if you will, when sales are really good.
Yeah.
And realistically, for a lot of contractors, over the last couple of years with the pandemics, many had record years in the history of the company. So many people were staying home and, you know, and improving their homes and things like that. And so, you know, we did really, really well. And now all of a sudden, we need to kind of scale that back a little bit. And so all of a sudden, sales are going to go down a little bit. We're going to see some of those issues starting to rear their ugly heads again.
Yep.
What about the other one that comes to mind is supplier debt?
Supplier debt's the same thing. It's debt. Mm-hmm. Again, we should pay them back in 30, 60 days. I'll give you a little bit of leeway. But often we use, number one, our suppliers as our bank because they complain the least, at least to begin with. But when you're out there at $90,000 in debt and you're suddenly on COD, guess what? Mm-hmm. Things change.
And rapidly.
That $90,000 I owe has got to get paid back. Mm-hmm. And when I pay it back, it's not going to show as an expense on my P&L statement. It's already been through there. So it just goes out the other end.
So, you know, really when contractors are they're coming up with their pricing, they need to build that past due balance with supplier, if they have one, into their really into their overhead, just like they're, just like it's a truck payment or anything else that they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Every loan, every debt you have needs to be built into your overhead cost. Mm-hmm. So it eventually becomes part of your hourly rate. And again, the beauty of that is once you pay one of those things off, it's no longer part of your overhead. That $6,000 a year we're paying out now becomes profit, and you haven't changed your rates or anything else.
It all falls to the bottom line. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question about it. So that's a good one. And it's a couple, it's an area I think, you know, we tend to think of trucks and business loans and some of those things when you talk about debt, but we don't necessarily think about the line of credit or a past due balance with a supplier. So those are two areas that, kind of get in trouble, don't they? So your third item then is growth does not equal increased profit. What do you mean by that?
Probably the most misunderstood term in the trades industry today is growth. Mm-hmm. Because most people see a direct relationship between growth and profitability. Right. Meaning if I do a little more work, I'll make a little more money. If I do a lot more work, I'll make a lot more money. If I double sales, I'll double profits. That can happen, but most of the time it doesn't. When the company grows, it doesn't just grow in sales, it grows in cost as well. Mm-hmm. There's additional overhead you need, there's additional people you need, there's additional resources you need, there's additional software and or equipment you need. Those costs are going up as well. So when it comes to growth, it's not just a matter of growing, it's looking at the overall cost of doing business, which again goes back to setting proper hourly rates to begin with.
Yep. No question. You know, and you look at that part of it, you know, so many companies kind of grow, and that's where you get out of that term, right? I think you've said it before, they grow themselves out of business.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's three critical points of growth, and one is when the owner moves from the field into the office. Mm-hmm. That's when his salary is no longer productive labor, bringing in money. Now I'm an overhead cost. Boom, that's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Generally, you got to raise your rate somewhere between $8 and $12 an hour just to cover you moving into the office to make the same profit you made before. Mm-hmm. The next really critical point of growth is when gross sales hit roughly $1 million a year, somewhere between $750,000 to $1.2 million. That's the most critical point of growth in the entire life of the company, because that's when you're being forced to make some significant investments in the company to prepare you to move to the next level, but you don't have the sales to support it yet. I've worked with companies for 35 years in all the trades. And I don't have any national statistics in terms of numbers to look at. But what I found out was a good 70% of the contractors who hit $1 million in gross sales for the first time lost money. Mm. You talk about frustration. You spent your whole working career, be that 2, 3, 5, 15 years, to hit that $1 million a year. You finally hit it. I didn't make any money. That's frustrating.
Right. You know, and you know, so we both heard that comment, right? Man, I made a whole lot more money when I was half this size.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the challenge to that, right, like you said, they have to start investing in the infrastructure and building, hiring more people, buying more trucks, all the rest of that stuff. Now, what about for those contractors that are well past $1 million?
The irony is history repeats itself. The most critical point of growth is around $1 million a year gross. But those same principles, principle meaning you've got to make some investments to prepare you to move to the next level, but you don't quite have the sales to support it, that hits you again at $2.5 million, hits you again at $5 million, hits you again at $10 million.
Yep.
Those are all critical points of growth from a cash flow standpoint, because again, we got to make the investment and we don't quite have the sales to support it yet.
And that's a real challenge. It really is. Now, yeah, again, I think we both worked with companies. I know, you know, we've had companies that are $5 million, $8 million, you know, $12 million. I think you had one that was in the 20s at that point. And again, so they're bigger, but they're not making any money.
No, same principle.
Yeah. And I think the sad reality is that it doesn't matter if you're a $500,000 company or a $20 million company, right? Reality says we all move a lot of dollars every year.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. It's not how many dollars we're moving, it's how many dollars are you keeping.
Yeah.
Right. And all too many get to the end of the day, the week, the month, the year, and they're worn out because they've been putting in long hours and they got nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
And that's all comes down to really, quite frankly, not understanding that piece. So you look at really that item again, all kind of ties back to that first item you brought out, right? I can see why that labor pricing was on the top of your list.
Yeah, because literally any change in your business, I don't care what it is, hire an individual, change an overhead cost, buy another piece of equipment. Anytime you change the cost of doing business, it's going to affect your hourly rate one way or the other.
Sure. Or it needs to.
And it needs to. And if you don't adjust it, you're either making more money or making less money.
Yep.
And you need to know what's going on.
Absolutely. No question.
And just to wrap up the growth thing again, we talked about 3 points of growth that can put you out of business. One was when you move from the field into the office. The other is $1 million, $2.5, $5, and $10. The third one's any point of rapid growth. And I define rapid growth as anything over roughly 15% a year. Anything over that's going to cause not gentle, but severe cash flow problems. And again, it goes back to setting your hourly rates, creating the budget, and staying on top of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Those are critical. So let's go to number four, right? The next one you've got is departmentalization is critical. What do you mean by departmentalization?
Most companies start out doing one, maybe two things. Mm-hmm. They either start out just doing service, maybe they started out just doing equipment replacement, but 5, 10, 15 years later, now what are we doing? Mm-hmm. We're doing residential, light commercial, maybe some commercial work. Mm-hmm. We're doing service. We're doing retrofit. We're doing maintenance agreements. We're doing 4, 5, 6, 7 different things. Mm-hmm. And typically, you can confirm this or not, but I would say a good 95% at least of the companies I worked with over the years, one-on-one, all the money comes into one pot. Mm-hmm. All the bills get written out of that same pot. And if there's any money left, gee, we were profitable.
We were okay, yeah.
When you break the company out by department, almost without exception, there's going to be at least one department losing money and nobody knew it. We made $50,000 profit in installation. We lost $25,000 in service. Bottom line says we had $25,000 profit for the year. Eh, not great, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. But if you broke it out and realized that, and you could bring a service up to even break even, you just made another $25,000.
Right.
But you don't know it because you don't break it out by department. Almost nobody does that.
So let me ask you this question. You know, when you say break out the company, there's two things that I'll hear on that one. Number one is, you know, Tom, we're too small. We've got three guys. We all do everything. We can't departmentalize.
You have to departmentalize. The overhead costs for doing different types of work, the difference in them is huge. Mm-hmm. When you think about just a standard size service department, you're going to have a dispatcher. You're going to have a service manager. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a CSR. All that's bunches of money on overhead up here. And you've got three or four techs out there who are billing out half their hours. Mm-hmm. So you got this huge overhead over a small amount of hours over here. Well, guess what? Hourly rate skyrockets. And it's just the opposite in the installation department. Lots and lots of hours. Even if my overhead was identical between the two departments, and it's not. Mm-hmm. But even if it was, service would still be significantly higher because it's got less hours to spread it over.
Yeah, and typically, even if I have, let's say, three guys in each department, you still don't have the same number of hours, do you?
Nope.
Right? Nope. And why is that? Right? If I've got these three guys spending 40 hours a week doing installs and these three service techs doing 40 hours a week running service calls, aren't they working the same number of hours?
They're working the same number of hours, but you're not charging the customer the same number of hours. Typically, installers, you're going to charge out 75-80% of their time at least. Mm-hmm. When it comes to a service tech, if you start tracking the hours, typically 50% or less of their total hours that you pay them for can you charge a customer.
Mm-hmm. And again, all of your overhead costs have to be spread across those billable hours, right? It's all about the billable hours. So that's where it becomes so important to really understand that part of it. Now, the second question I've got then is, so many companies have their accounting programs, be it QuickBooks, be it whatever else that they're using. Does that mean that they now need to break out QuickBooks as three separate departments or just understanding the overhead in each department?
They do need to break out their sales by department. Mm-hmm. And their cost of goods by department, because that's critical for setting your hourly rates, period. You've got to spread those out. But when it comes to overhead and things like that, you need to go through the process of labor pricing and breaking out those overheads by department, but you don't need to track those every single month. Review them, make sure they're in line, but you don't need to track them every single month by department.
Yeah, so we're not saying they have to go back in and completely retool their QuickBooks, because again, trying to now split that every single expense that the utility bill comes in. How do I split that? But, you know, we don't have to go to that level.
No.
But we do need to understand how it impacts our pricing. Okay. Well, that's a good one. Next item is residential service work needs to be priced using flat rate pricing.
If you'd asked me 5, 6, 7 years ago, should everybody be on flat rate pricing? I'd probably said no, especially if you're in the 50, 75 hour dollar an hour range. Mm-hmm. But today, I love flat rate pricing. Mm-hmm. And the reason is we are the only industry in the world who performs our job, our work first, and tells the customer the price afterwards, what it's going to cost them. People want to know what it cost them up front. Flat rate pricing, in terms of the way it's presented, tells the customer the cost of the job before the repair is done. Mm-hmm. If there's going to be fussing or problems with the pricing, you're going to deal with that up front. the other real benefit of flat rate pricing is the change of hourly rates. If you go through and reprice your company or your service department, you find out you got to go up $15 an hour. You simply reprint your flat rate manual. You go out the next day and there's not a customer in your customer base who knows there's a difference. Mm-hmm. Because they never see the hourly rate, they never see the material costs, they never see the markup. Mm-hmm. Now you try to turn around and change your hourly rate, $15 an hour on time material, you're going to have an uproar from your customers.
Oh, no question. Especially, you know, you look at the customer won't notice a difference. There's a lot of techs that won't even notice it. Right? I mean, especially in today's world with the tablets and that stuff, you can make the change in the office. It hits their tablets the next service call they're on. And they, you know, unless they're tracking what it was costing, they're not going to realize the increase either.
Yeah. You don't even have to tell them.
Right. Exactly. And it's more than just the labor rate. Right, because in today's world, material costs are going up so much that that needs to be done on a regular basis. So this, you know, so this question goes back really twofold. How often do you think I need to be updating that flat rate pricing guide? And along with that, how often should I be reviewing my labor pricing?
Two good questions. When it comes to labor pricing, a absolute minimum of twice a year. Mm-hmm. With the way things are changing rapidly right now, from parts cost to cost in general, you probably need to review it at least quarterly. when it comes to flat rate pricing, I'm sure you have the same issues that I have when I talk to contractors. I haven't updated my flat rate pricing for 3 years, and I'm not going to pay $1,200 to get a new book. I mean, I lost that much money yesterday.
Right?
Because materials went up, overhead went up, my labor rates went up, my gasoline went up. I mean, if I'm changing my hourly rate, that means I need to change my flat rate as well.
That's right. That's right. You know, and yeah, material costs have gone up so much. And so if we're not updating that book, we're just flat out underpricing the customer, aren't we?
That's right.
And then we're wondering why there's no profit at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No question. You know, and that's also one of those areas that, you know, as we work with, the, you know, and you and I have both heard this one, we'll go into some markets across North America and they'll be going, does that flat rate stuff really work? Right? That nobody in that market is doing it. And then there's other markets where they're going, are you telling me there's some markets in this country that don't use flat rate pricing? Right? You know, and then there's others that are still trying to figure it out, right? But
yeah, that's right.
You are absolutely correct. I firmly believe even in those markets where it's not already the standard, it will be the standard. And that's really in all trades, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gradually spreading to all the different trades out there. Anybody has a service rate, they need to be on that. And some of them are real simple, like irrigation. You can actually create your own fairly simply.
Sure.
You get to HVAC or electrical or some of the plumbing. Yeah, you need the outside services. But either way, do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just in the last 3 months, I had somebody come in to do a repair on our refrigerator. They were flat rate up front, right? They looked at it. They said, okay, it's going to be X number. I mean, they before they did the repair, told us what it was going to cost. The other one was some flooring that we did. I had some vinyl flooring and had somebody come in and, you know, had some damage to one of the tiles on the flooring. And they came, they quoted us a price up front to come in and do that. And I always find it interesting because I will ask contractors all the time, are you on flat rate pricing? How many of them say no? And I'm going, you're wrong. You are. Because quite frankly, every time you do an install job, do you not give the customer a price up front before you actually do the work and let them decide whether they want to go ahead or not?
Absolutely.
Right? That's flat rate pricing, right?
Same principle.
All we're doing is moving it to the service side as well.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I like that one. Now, the last one is interesting, right? So your last one, you said the fear factor of raising the company's hourly rate is on the part of the company, not the customer. What do you mean by that?
Every company, including ours, always is somewhat fearful to raise their hourly rate. So we assume because we're fearful, the customer is fearful.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. Customer today is looking for three things. They're looking for quality work, do what you said you're going to do, when you said you were going to do it. You do those three things consistently, and price literally will only be on the top 10 list of concerns.
You know, that's interesting, Tom. When I joined you 15 years ago, the first program I sat through with you, even before I joined the company, you said those three things, right? And what were they again?
Quality work.
Yep.
Do what you said you're going to do.
Yep.
When you said you were going to do it.
Yep.
And show up on time.
Yeah, exactly. Show up on time. And we look at that piece of the puzzle, and you were saying that years ago. And recently, I think it was about 6 or 8 months ago, I saw a study that was done for North America, U.S. and Canada. And it basically was asking the consumer, what are you looking for from your contractors? And the top four items, out of the top four, those three were numbers 1, 3, and 4. And the fourth item was good customer service, which is kind of a green term. I mean, quite frankly, you do the other three, you're providing great customer service. And so they absolutely, and price, I think, was like number 5 or 6. It was well down the line. And so you, that fear factor tends to be between our ears, isn't it?
It is. I mean, back in the early days of Granny and Associates, back in the late 80s, we would do a full-day seminar on labor pricing. Usually 6 or 8 weeks later, we do another one on cash flow. Mm-hmm. Generally, the same people attended. I'd always ask the second group when they came back, how many of you raised your rates since last time you were here? Mm-hmm. Almost everybody's hand would go up. I said, how much did you raise it? Some would say $1, $2, $5. Some would say $10 or $15 or $20. Mm-hmm. And then my final question is, how many of you had complaints from your customer when you raised your hourly rate? Mm-hmm. And without exception, zip.
Yep. Zip. You know, I remember one program that I was in with you that you were teaching, and we had one contractor in there that found out that they were underpricing by $75 an hour. $75. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty substantial. And this was a program where, same thing, they came in for a couple of days, went home for 2 months, came back to the second half of the program at that point. And you asked them the question, okay, what did you do to your rates? And he said, look, if I'm going to do this, I'm working way too hard not to cover my costs and make a reasonable profit. So I went for it. And they were flat rate pricing. He immediately, the next day, implemented the $75 an hour increase. And you had asked them, so what kind of pushback did you get? And Jim, the owner of the company, said, you know what, I was really nervous about it, but I figured if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. Rip off the Band-Aid, right? And so we implemented it the next day. And being nervous about it, he said, I called every single customer of a service call for the next 2 weeks. I'd simply call them and say, hey, this is Jim over at XYZ Heating. John, our service tech, was out there yesterday working on your system. Just wanted to reach out to you personally and find out, is there any way that we did not meet your expectations? Mm-hmm. He said, out of 2 weeks of service calls, several service techs running full tilt every day, two customers even mentioned price. It's not an, and that was a $75 an hour increase.
Yeah, it's amazing. Absolutely. I remember Chimney Sweep went through the program and she went back home and she raised her rates for the cleaning of the chimney. she called me about a month later and she said, Tom, I've raised my rates 3 times in the last month and I haven't had a single complaint. Is there no limit to this? Well, there is a limit, but it's a lot higher than you think it is.
Right.
Again, if you do quality work, you do what you said you're going to do when you said you were going to do it.
And communication is so important to the communication with the customer, right?
Absolutely.
Well, that's 6 items, Tom, and those are 6 good items that are there. Now, again, as we said a little bit earlier, we're feeling really good right now. We're proud of Granny & Associates, 35 years. You've been working with, again, so many contractors over the years, and you just kind of wrapped up a lot of that stuff into a new book. Right, which is pretty cool, right? So, profitable labor pricing for the for trades contractors. Tom, why did you write that book?
Partially because I just wanted to get some of the things I've learned over the years on paper, mm-hmm. Mostly so that it could be handed to a new contractor who may never come to a seminar, or at least not initially, mm-hmm. And cover the things that we just covered here. It also goes through the detail of how to set proper hourly rates. There's 10 worksheets in there, walks them right straight through the process. So again, hopefully a contribution to the industry that can help somebody.
Mm-hmm. No question. I mean, one of the things that is cool, again, is we change lives, right? And if they understand what you're talking about here, it's mm-hmm. going to change their life. There's no question about it. Yep. You know, and it's interesting because I read through this and again, having worked with you for so long, you know, I see pride on every page in this thing. And it's just it's rewarding to see it in this format. So, yeah, again, Profitable Labor Pricing for Trades Contractors by Tom Grandy. Find it on our website. Find it on Amazon.com. You're everywhere, aren't you? So, you know, as we wrap this up, again, 35 years. What, you know, any final thoughts initially that you would give to contractors, whether starting out or whether they've been there, a second, third generation company, any thoughts that you would give to them, reflecting back on 35 years?
Probably the number one thing is be humble. Mm. Realize you don't have all the answers, nor does anybody else have all the answers. Mm-hmm. I have promoted, as you have as well, for many, many, many years, the whole concept of mixed groups. Mm. where contractors and groups of four, five, six contractors meet together physically once or twice a year, talk about different subjects within their business. They're all similar type businesses in non-competing territories, mm-hmm. but they create a environment where they've got somebody to call. Mm-hmm. Said, hey, Jim, I got a problem with this. You ever run into that before? No, I haven't. But call Paul. He's been through that. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you got a network of people you can call. That has probably been the number one recommendation from my standpoint for most contractors. Get involved because nobody knows it all. Mm-hmm. If you need to come to a seminar, go to a seminar. If you need to go to a workshop, go to a workshop. But go somewhere where you can learn from other people.
Nobody knows it all. You're right. And that pride is, it can be a real challenge for some. And mm-hmm. it can be the obstacle behind what's causing them from being able to move forward as a company.
Exactly. Right?
There's nothing wrong with not knowing as the leader of the company. Staying there becomes an issue.
Yeah. Right?
We continuously have to be growing. And, and I've watched you do that in all the years that we're together, right? You still continue to improve what you're doing and grow in different practices that are there. And again, it's important for every business leader to do that.
Yeah, it really is.
So, Tom, this has been fun. It's been a great kind of looking back at some of those key elements over the last 35 years. And I think that it's something that absolutely every one of these applies to contractors, every contractor that's out there that we as we go forward and learn. And it's an absolute joy to be working with you on a regular basis.
Yeah, my joy as well, Bill. Thanks.
Very good. Excellent. Well, we will bring this to a close. Have a great day.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.